Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Simon Wolfson, and this is the Vice UK podcast. What does it feel like to be rich? We know what it means to be poor. For millions of young people in the UK, poverty is a fact of everyday life. Young people have been disproportionately affected by government cuts, particularly the cut to housing benefit, which now if you're under 25, you can't even claim. But we're not talking about those people today. We're talking about this other group of people. People who say that they're poor, but act like they're rich. We hear a lot about how this group of people are going to be so much worse off than their parents because they've got low wages and high rents, they've got no job security, and they have big student loans that they have to pay off. But looking at them, you wouldn't know that because they're buying £8 lunches and drinking nice coffees. Many of them rent flats in the nice bit of town and get Ubers everywhere. Are those people poor or are they rich? Later, we're going to be hearing from people who get Wonga loans, not because they're in dire straits and need to eat, but because they want to have a big night out and they've run out of cash. And we'll be joined by Makita Oliver, a TV presenter who, in an extreme case of spending money she didn't have, ended up declaring herself bankrupt at the age of 26. We'll talk about this in a minute, but before that, I wanted to talk to financial journalist Hazel Sheffield about who these people are who might never have any wealth, but act like they're rich.
Young people aren't earning anywhere near what their parents earned at the similar age, and they can't expect to either. Now, half the number of people own homes as they did 20 years ago. There was a sense, you know, when you started out in London that, you know, it was going to be hard or you weren't going to have loads of cash. But by the time you get to like 27 or 28, you kind of think, well, hang on, like I should have had a pay rise. Like I should be able to afford my rent and like my brunch on a Sunday. And there's a sense of injustice there that I think people just think, well, I'm going to have that brunch because, you know, I've worked hard. I should be able to go out for brunch on a Sunday.
What are some of the risks with people who have no wealth or negative wealth and no seeming prospects of ever gaining much wealth? They are spending all the money that they earn from month to month.
The risks on an individual basis are obviously like personal debt. These kinds of people are susceptible to like falling prey to payday loans just to make ends meet. And once you're in that cycle, then, you know, that's when you start to suffer from things like anxiety and depression. And all these things are kind of a horrible downward spiral. You know, the other story I've just written for Vice is about bankruptcy and like rising levels of bankruptcy among young people. Bankruptcy actually isn't the worst idea for people who have found themselves in completely unsustainable levels of debt.
What could it mean sort of as this generation reaches pensionable age if we don't own property, if we haven't saved, if we are still sort of living paycheck to paycheck in 30 years?
Not even the government knows. Like the government is making policies for the people voting for it. And those people are people who are pension age now. So they're doing everything they can to keep those people happy. They've got triple lock on pensions. They've got buy-to-let houses. You know, everything is rigged in their favour. And we're the generation suffering from that. And there have been massive changes, as you say, in like pensions, for example, that mean that when we get to that age, we are never going to have those benefits. Like the baby boomer, like golden era, that's never going to be repeated. Like we grew up in a recession. And unless we start to look after ourselves, no one's making a new plan for us. The government isn't like being like, oh, you know, when they get to 60, everything will be fine. This will happen. They don't know.
As this group of people grows and grows, does that reach a tipping point? Is that the political answer, that there is going to be a larger number of people who are in this group?
Actually, Another really important way to start thinking about this is that, you know, baby boomers have a lot of money and they're going to start dying and they're going to start leaving their two houses, their buy-to-let houses and their inheritances to some people in our generation who are going to be the next, like, rich people. If, like, inheritance matters more, if we don't have houses and we don't have savings and inheritance is everything we're relying on, that means that who your parents are matter more. And all that does is, like, make class divide worse within our own generation. So you're talking about a class divide within the millennial generation that's going to get worse as we get older. I mean, I don't know what the consequences of that are, but that's certainly something to think about.
Vish Seppo, hi. This was the week that Shelter released a study saying that 4 out of 10 homes didn't meet sort of basic criteria of acceptability. Some of those things were that they had damp or that they were cold. Other things were that people living in them didn't feel like they were secure enough to kind of make them their home. Writing about housing on Vice, that's certainly not something that would be surprising. Those kinds of issues have been going on for a long time.
It seems like something that starts as being accepted with the idea of student housing and like student flats, which are kind of always seen as being a bit rundown and gross, and you have a cowboy landlord who's never there, and that kind of just extends into your 20s, whether you went to university or not, where you're sort of made to accept that you live in somewhere that's, you know, not as good, but it's what you can afford and you have to live somewhere, so it's fine. And then suddenly you might get to the point where you look around and you're like, oh, I'm 45 and I'm still living in a place that isn't up to scratch and that isn't actually up to standard anymore. And that's what we saw reflected in this report and like a BBC news story about it, which is kind of just sad, but it feels like we're also powerless to fight it, so you wonder what you can do.
One of the main reasons that I still live at home is that I go to my friends' houses and I look at how they live and I just say, I'm not paying more than half my wage to live like this. Because it's fucking ridiculous. I don't feel the need to have some kind of like antiquated sense of independence and you know, adulthood, just so I can fucking live in like share a shower with my mate, which I really don't want to do. Like fucking my mate's fucking pubes all over the floor and shit.
You're
like
fine
that.
To share a shower with your dad and have your dad's pubes.
Well,
all
actually,
over the floor.
They've got their own bathroom. So, because my dad is a builder, he built. A loft extension, and then they just live up there. That's why it's such a good like situation for me, is because I've basically got a whole floor to myself in which I can make as much sex sounds and, you know, jizz in my shower as much as I like.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know?
Oh, God. But another big part of it is that people don't feel secure in their places, right? And that is something I think we've all dealt with, of just like moving from a place, well, not you, Bish, but most people, moving from a place, like you're there for 3 months and then you go to another place for a month and then you go to another place for 5 months and you've got like one sort of bag of all your stuff. And it's very hard to feel in any way settled. And I think that leads people to not want to buy anything, you know, to want to spend all your money on food and restaurants and things like that, and even like Ubers and holidays and stuff. It makes you in a way just like, because you've got nowhere to really put it, you just don't. I mean, most people don't even own furniture, right? Yeah. They just go from one rented furnished place to another. They have nothing. Do you have anything you'd save from a fire?
Yeah, I've got sentimental items that I would save, you know. Things I'd save from a fire aren't things that I've, like, spent loads of money on, and I think that's my investment there. I need to save it from the fire. It'll be, you know, trinkets.
What trinkets?
I'd save my collection of Nazi literature, because that is very important to me.
A lot of books on Hitler.
Yeah. Wow. Not just Hitler. The rest of them get a bit of attention as well.
Do you think, though, that in general, like, what I'm really struck by is when you go to the countryside and sort of drive around, you see everything that's there is aimed towards improving your little plot, right? There's, like, DIY stores and garden stores and sort of big shops and kitchen places, and everything that people do in their spare time is about, like, making your little plot better. Mm. And if you walk down the high street here, everything is about experiences. It's like, eat some fucking food and then like
go
get pissed, go vape, you know, like maybe get a cab, maybe buy some clothes, but you might even like take them back the next day, as a lot of people do. Like everything feels really like experience led rather than trying to sort of build on anything.
If you live in an inner city, you haven't got a lot of gardens, so you don't need a lot of garden centres.
No, I mean, you don't have anything that's yours, presumably, you know, a place to stay in and build upon.
You still buy, you know, furniture and light bulbs and...
I feel like people don't, though. Most people don't even own a sofa or a bed or any of
that. I don't know about that. I'm not so sure that that's true.
I think it's fairly common that you will often be using your landlord's furniture and their things. Yeah. You essentially, like, will helicopter into their house for 6 months or 12 months or 3 months, whatever the contract might be, and then they'll chuck you out or they'll raise the rent and then you'll stay and suck it up and pay for another year or whatever. But often you just be doing that with just dropping your little middling belongings into the flat and not really owning anything else.
A lot of people went to university and lived like students and seemed to be quite content with continuing to live like students even though they're not. Whereas I'd imagine a lot of people who didn't go to university are not content with living like students because it's a load of bullshit and will do anything to not live like that.
Off the record, what is the most...
Again, this is on the record. You did this last time. Very on the record.
This cannot be further from off the record.
The definition of on the record here.
Off the record, what is the thing that you spent money on that you'd like be most embarrassed to tell someone who like fought in a war about?
A pair of embroidered joggers.
How much did you spend on them?
Upwards of £300.
No.
I saw Jesse Nelson from Little Mix wearing them once. Someone sent me a photo of it and I felt extremely embarrassed. They are nice though. The embroidery is fantastic.
Mine would be, and it's not so much that I'm ashamed as I'm like embarrassed of my stupidity, that one time the washing machine broke and I called the Hoover who make the washing machine and they said, oh, we can fix it now and it'll cost £100 or you can get our repair care for 1 year and we'll fix it for free. And something about just the nature of the phone call made me go for the latter option. And as soon as I hung up, I knew I'd made an error. And still, every day, every month from my wage, £16.50 comes out in case my washing machine ever breaks again, which obviously it never will. And that I'm quite ashamed of. But it can happen to anyone, right? Like, you have a thing like that, and you're just like, yeah, whatever, we'll spend a bit of cash on it. And I think, you know... increasingly one thing that people will do is if they don't have the money in their bank account to get their £300 joggers, they will go to payday loans companies like Wonga and get a bit of cash from them.
Poor in the sheets, middle class in the streets.
40% of millennials say they've used payday loans, pawn shops, or other kinds of alternative finance. In fact, 25 to 30 year olds say they are far more likely to use payday loans than any other group. This is Joe. He used payday loans a lot when he was at university in Dundee.
Yeah, I used to use Wonga quite a bit. Just having left uni and not completed my degree, I used it quite a lot at the end of every month when I was doing like really shit jobs in offices. You just kind of lived like paycheck to paycheck, but you didn't have enough to live paycheck to paycheck. So about a week before it would drop, you just had to have more money. The kind of the longer you wanted the money, the higher your payback would be. I remember reading the rules and like the APR on it is like 2,000% or something. It's like astronomical. You basically like borrow £100 and pay £30 for the pleasure of doing so.
People think of payday loans as a lender of last resort, but that's not how Joe was using it.
I was spending a lot of my income on drink and drugs at the time, especially in Dundee. It was like having a third parent. I remember once I like abused it and like used it to buy an Xbox and an LCD TV and had to pay back like an extra £130 on top of the amount I'd borrowed, which was pretty awful.
Even though he was having to borrow money every month, when it arrived in his bank account, he still felt rich.
I mean, it's weird. I think just like definitions of... wealth are just like so different now for our generation, because like you can be like massively in credit but still live a fairly normal life. Like I don't actually have any credit cards. For some reason I decided Wonga was a better option than a credit card. It just felt more like short-term punishment. When you do it with Wonga, it's like done and done. It's like you've been punched in the face. But I feel like with a credit card, it's just like slow, silent torture that just haunts you for the rest of your life. Like, all my mates that I know that live out their credit cards have had them for years and just don't know how they're ever going to dig out of them.
I think that's really interesting, that the psychology of almost renting money from Wonga was more appealing than the complexity of long-term credit. Now Joe's in a job, his financial situation has changed, but his attitude to money hasn't.
I think I've just got to a point now where, like, I classify being like £2,000 in debt as zero. So, like, I live to be £2,000 in debt. Like, that's how I operate. Like, I'm not trying to get out of that hole. I'm not, like, saving up to like get out of my overdraft. I'm just happy to be in my overdraft.
And he's not the only one in that situation. I think 40% of young people have used payday loans or something similar. 30% live regularly in their overdraft. We're joined by Makita. Hi, Makita.
Hi.
And Bish and Seppo are still here. You made a documentary about payday loans and that kind of thing. Is that a kind of familiar sounding story?
Yeah. I know what living in debt is like. And I swear to God, it's the most depressing state to live in. It feels like you're sort of being suffocated constantly and you're sort of living under this dark cloud all the time. So it's interesting that Joe just said, I don't have any intentions to leave this state. I just now live in debt. And I think that is a place that people have become more comfortable. It sort of doesn't feel as alien as it should. It's like, yeah, I'll just live in debt for the rest of my life.
For a lot of people in that kind of situation, the amount of money they have in their bank account doesn't really affect how they feel about their own sense of wealth. They're not really aware of debt in that traditional sense.
Well, exactly. And also, I think with things like Instagram and stuff, everything is so about keeping up appearances now. So I think people feel that it doesn't really matter if they have no money in their account as long as it looks like they're living a certain way. And even if that living in debt allows you to live that way, at least you're still looking good from the outside, even if you're sort of dying inside every day. At least it still looks great on Instagram, you get a lot of likes.
For people who haven't read The Sun, what can you remind them of your
I'm daily,
your
it was on Daily Mail. So I went bankrupt about 5 years ago. And that was particularly difficult because I was famous, so it was everywhere, so that was fun. But it was particularly difficult because I was 27, and it was a very adult thing to go through, bankruptcy. It felt like something that sort of Kim Basinger goes through and Wesley Snipes, not me. And one of the hardest things for me was the lack of information, because there's no financial education in schools, which I still think is absolutely ridiculous. I didn't really know about tax, and I had a bit of a dodgy accountant, and I definitely didn't know anything about VAT and things like that.
What would be like a lesson plan for, like, what would you have liked to go to in year 10, sat down, this is financial education, kids, what would have been the actual useful thing?
Yeah, let's not push it. I mean, it wouldn't be an enjoyable class, but it would be like something that sat you down and said, this is what a mortgage means and this is how to obtain them. This is the kind of conversations you will have to get one. This is what a deposit is. This is what tax means. This is why you pay tax. This is how you pay tax. This is what it means to self-assess yourself. This is what VAT means. I swear to God, I only learned what VAT meant last year, which is ridiculous. I'm 31 years old. So I genuinely think that it doesn't even have to be very complicated. As you said, just very matter of fact.
But I think it needs to go deeper than that. I think it needs to be like, hey, here's like five different chairs. Look at them. This one costs £1,000. This one costs £2. This one costs, you know, like, I think people need to get an early idea of like what stuff is valued at.
Right.
Because I'm so bad at that. You know, like, it's only when I meet people who do like art department stuff that they're like, why are you buying that table that is like, look, I can fucking make you a table with like three bits of wood. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think that it's very easy to get brainwashed by marketing, and like, and young people are very brainwashed by marketing and think that you have to spend loads of money on stuff that is basically made out of crap.
Yeah.
I would love a kind
of... Oh, God, I sounded like a dad so much. Like, I literally felt his spirit, like, come through my body. But it is true. Like, you know, you think you're getting a great bargain at IKEA and it breaks in 6 months. What am I talking about?
How old are you? You're 55, aren't you?
Do you think that there is something underlying of keep people poor and stupid?
Oh, yeah. 100%, yeah. I mean, it's...
I just don't think it's purely accidental that there's...
Well, no, I mean, the reason that David Cameron was legally fucking doing his taxing is because people like him are allowed to do that. And if as long as those guys are doing it and everyone else isn't, you know, those people are on the top echelon. And if they're not paying the full amount of, like, tax or whatever in a very transparent way, in the same way that everyone else has to, everyone else just has to do it and has to get on with it.
And also, our economy is very much based on people getting themselves into personal debt and spending money in the shops.
It's based on buying things.
It's like, based on buying things.
That was the big difference between, like, the 70s and now. Like, all we're meant to do is buy stuff. That's how this economy runs, like, service sector and just, like, buying things in shops. There's nothing else. Like, they did away with all the other industries in the country. So now you can't, like, build anything. So you have to just, like, buy something and then take an Uber to go somewhere else to buy something.
Yeah. And if you don't do those things, the economy really does fail. And they do things like reduce VAT for 6 months or whatever, just to try and make you go out and buy more stuff in the shops.
Yeah.
Like, the government is really not keen on you having savings. The interest rate anyway is 0%. Jesus. And so there's no, if you have savings, you're effectively losing money. And so it's not just us who are being like, well, whatever, we'll just go and get stuff. There's a lot of wider pressures on people to not save. And so the only people who really make money are people who are rich enough to invest, which is the thing above saving where the money happens.
Yeah.
And everyone else, you know, our parents, like, safe savers, right? You get 3 or 4% a year, you put money away, ISAs and all of that stuff. And ISA, that cash ISA they're trying to sell you now, you'll get lucky to get 0.8%. So did you get into a lot of debt before the bankruptcy? I mean, did you try and fix it with debt?
It was, I didn't pay tax for 3 years.
Right.
And I thought that would just be okay. And then realised it really, really wasn't. And start getting really quite serious letters to my door that I would just go, okay, that's not happening. And just tried to hide from it until it wasn't something I could hide from anymore. And so then my debt was cleared, because bankruptcy clears your debt, which is quite nice. But still, you live as a debted person forever. People would look at me in the street sort of like I'd lost a limb. Like, you know, is everything all right?
I was
like,
yes, I'm fine, thank you. Other reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
That might not have necessarily
that wasn't the bankruptcy. But yeah, I think, but it was really important for me to talk about it because, well, it was everywhere. And I think knowledge is power. And the more we know about these things, that hopefully less people will have to go through it in the brutal way I had to. I think that there's no point in pretending that debt isn't a part of our lives. And it's about learning how to, if it's going to be in our lives, how to manage it. And also take the shame out of it. Because that's so much what, for me, debt meant. Just like shame and embarrassment and guilt. And actually, it is... because of the way things are at the moment, you know, the fact that no one's ever going to really be able to buy a home in the city that they live in, we are going to have to live in a different way. So I agree with you. I think maybe just managing it in a more realistic way.
That money that you owe to the tax man,
yeah.
Are you still paying a little bit of it back?
No.
It's done.
It just...
scratched from the surface.
Guillotine.
You're making it sound better and better.
Yeah.
This is a pretty good advert for bankruptcy.
Wicked to go bankrupt. No. It was, yeah. But then, no. I had to pay a percentage of everything I earned for, like, 2 years.
Does that accumulate to the amount that you would have?
They don't care about you trying to pay off the actual debt. They just want to know that they're taking a piece of your pie every moment they can. I remember I got a big job. I hosted the Mobos, and we got, like, an email going, we've seen her hosting the Mobos. We expect to see some of that money. It's like,
really?
For God's
Google
sake.
Alerts.
Yeah, literally. Keith Oliver just got another job. Pass it in. Also, the other thing is, because I lived so frivolously, I didn't own anything. If I'd owned stuff, they would have taken it all. So if I'd owned a house, that would have been taken from me. So no, that bankruptcy's hell if you own stuff. I just didn't have anything, which I know really annoyed them. I was like, I don't have anything for you to take because I haven't bought anything
that
of any value.
Lucky that none of us own anything then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe that's the way then.
Own nothing and then go bankrupt.
Because yeah. Then you kind of get one. Then you kind of get one over on them, which is the ultimate thrill, I think.
It's like, well, you can take my iPhone 6. Like, I don't have anything
exactly.
More valuable than that.
The thrill of bankruptcy. Yeah. Wow.
That's why you gotta have stuff. Like, you're only rich if you own. Like, if you own a property outright and you're not paying a mortgage on it, you are wealthy.
Oh, yeah, that's what it actually means
to be wealthy. Like, then it's like if your grandfather handed you a property and you never had to pay anything except for, like, a little bit of the tax when he died, that is what will make you, in my mind, more wealthy, because you will never have to pay anything but bills in that house and you will have a home for the rest of your life. Feasibly, you can then rent to make more money off of or live in and not pay any rent in. That's what it truly would make.
Yeah, I feel like there are worse things than not owning house.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like that is, like, the big maxim that everyone talks about when they talk about, like, the times are a changing. No one's earning money enough to buy houses and stuff like that. But
right.
It's sort of quite archaic.
I could see myself happily living until I die, not owning a house.
What does it then mean to sort of have money, to be rich, to be poor? There are obviously a lot of people in this country for whom poverty affects their everyday life, who are, you know, using food banks or living hand to mouth in quite a serious way. There's also an increasingly large group of people who are basically us, who have in their bank accounts zero or less than zero, yet live kind of relatively privileged lives. I mean, it's not, it started with renting nice flats in East London and Ubers, but it's going on now.
That's just a standard.
That's just a standard, and it's going to other things, like you can get a cleaner to come to your house in half an hour. There was a thing this week that's saying that shops can barely deal with the amount of clothes that are being returned because people just like buy really expensive outfits and then send them back the next day.
Right.
We're like living a kind of middle class life that we're just renting from people who are making all the money off us.
I think people are extremely hedonistic now, and they just like doing whatever they want to do. There's certainly a culture of like, I will just do what I want to do, and regardless of the effects that it will have on myself or anyone else, it's going to happen because I want to do it. And that's certainly how I live the most of my life. Like, I could get to the end of the month and like have like £40 left in my already expunged overdraft, and I'll still get a cab home, even though I can get a bus. Yeah. I'll still fucking do it. And I'll look at my fucking account and I'll be like, that's not looking good at all. But then I'll just get it anyway, because I just like, I'm obsessed and addicted to living comfortably, and I cannot not do it. And it's kind of been like, it's my comfortable life that I've had to this point that has kind of conditioned me into being that way. I've never had any real hardship in my life. I've never really experienced anything difficult particularly. So now I'm kind of like a big child and I'm incapable of probably looking after myself properly.
I mean, I assume some people have a backup plan and then others just don't, and they're like, I'm living and it's cool and I'll deal with life at 40 when I'm 40 and I look around and I've only got like £5,000 in savings.
If someone's listening to us thinking that we're all frivolous pricks and just flittering away our cash on silly things, the other option, of course, is to save, to live a more sort of restrictive life, save money, and at some point get a car or a house or some other thing. But because of how expensive everything is now, the thing that you can buy with those savings is by and large like not that. Again, it doesn't improve your quality of life. Like, we probably have a higher quality of life in rented accommodation than a lot of people do in bought accommodation, or a much nicer Uber car than someone could ever buy.
Yeah.
Is there something about that that is just so unfair for the savers and the strivers that then the thing... I mean, that is the real... If we actually did enter the world of trying to buy things, we wouldn't like it.
Yeah, but they're not saving and buying for, you know, fun. They're doing it for security, which is something we don't have.
Like, if you're saving to buy your house in, like, some small town on, like, the Essex kind of London border that's pretty hideous and boring, doesn't matter. Like, you're boring. You're buying that house because you've decided, like, I'm going to be boring and move here and have a kid. Not, like, I'm going to actually live in London and see my friends and do social things at night. Like, you have to kind of make that sacrifice. And once you accept that, like, you're 33 and you're boring, then it's cool. Like, you just live that life. You have that baby with that person who you met 10 years ago.
What if you have a child in the city that you grew up in? What if your child like to have a child in the community that you grew up in?
If you are from London and you don't already own property, then, like, basically good luck. Like, if you're the kind of Londoner who doesn't want to have to leave London, because obviously, like, why would you? Just accept that you're probably going to rent forever and you're not going to necessarily be able to afford a house for a while. Maybe you'll be able to afford one when you're, like, 50.
Thanks very much to Makita and to Hazel, also to Joe and to Seppo. This was the Vice UK podcast, produced by Sam Bonham at Rethink Audio. We'll be back next week.